started the fair's wildlife team, responding to bird nests and whatnot. And and I'm a wildlife biologist in my day job. And along with Kevin Hillary just spoke, we agreed to be subcommittee chairs for this chair, for this group. So we've been communicating a bit with Dennis and Kevin and I.
You dropped out. Yeah, we can't hear you, Glenn.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, Glenn. We couldn't hear Glenn.
Sorry.
Okay. You probably can't see anybody on your screen, Glenn. So I'm going to pick Kate and Brendan.
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm Kate. I'm Robert Albano's daughter-in-law, and Brendan is a child of Robert Albano, and he invited us to see if being on this committee or joining you guys was helpful at all. We are both architects by trade with a background in art and performance art. We've been working with Sierra and some other people on working with the city to get permits for a lot of things on the fair site. So you might've seen us around with clipboards. We're not a very loved crew, but we're trying to do that work as tactfully as possible. And the reason why Robert thought we might enjoy or be helpful on this team was we lived in Chicago while Chicago was being attacked by ash beetles. While we were studying architecture there, and we've just participated in and witnessed and been exposed to a lot of different ways that Chicago and artists and
particularly artists in Chicago sort of
dealt with it,
created work related to it.
Yeah. So. And I don't know, did we miss who else? Rick, have you introduced yourself yet?
Nope. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Speak up, Rick. We listen.
Yeah, I'm a horticulturalist. I've been a nurseryman and a landscaper and permaculture teacher and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know. that covers it pretty much.
Yeah, Rick also knows quite a bit about indigenous land management practices and a lot of this stuff. He's way too modest. How about Sierra?
Hey, everyone. It's so good to see you, Kate and Brennan. I started with the country fair on the permit team with Kate and Brennan, and I have a background in environmental consulting and landscape architecture, and currently I'm the site manager. So thank you, everyone, for being here. It's good to see y'all.
Thank you, Sierra. Is there anybody I missed? Okay, is there anybody who can take notes? It was my intention to do that. Okay, Anne, please do. And if you can send them to me, I will post them on our EAB website. And I hope you've had a chance to look at that website. It's kind of bare bones at this point, but there's a lot of good links and interesting materials. So, having done introductions, the next thing is agenda review. What do we want to accomplish in this meeting? There's a ton of stuff that people have suggested, but let's hear it. Paxton.
Part of reading the Emerald Ash Board Readiness and Response Plan for Oregon, I kind of paid attention a little bit to early detection, and it seems to me that we really want to look at early steps that we're going to need to deal with this, and one of those is trapping. And I think we need to develop some sort of plan to set out traps in particularly the South Woods, if it's that strong of ash. And that gets inundated every year. You know, there's a lot of cycling of good and bad wood there. So that strikes me as it could be a very well primary target, you know, early on. So I think setting out traps in that and checking them on a regular basis is going to be part of the program. That's kind of, that's why I looked at the early detection parts of the response plan and what we can do.
Yeah, I should point out that Shane had traps out during his tenure as site manager, and he didn't find any EABs, so that was good, but that's definitely something we need to continue. So Glenn, do you have something that you want to add to the agenda?
I was thinking, hoping to discuss or define, you know, how our group, what our goals are and how we're overlapping with or could collaborate with the other, you know, country fair groups that are working on this in different ways. And I think to good effect with Sierra's sort of operational work, sort of on-call task force, as well as I think I heard there was a path planning group. Maybe, I don't know if it's a group dedicated to this or not, but I think hammering out how we're going to approach the work and what it is would be paramount for me. Whether we can resolve all that tonight exactly, but I hope to get a statement and then start working with the other groups from that operational standpoint.
Thank you, Glenn. And Sierra, how about you? Do you have a contribution to what we should be doing? How can we collaborate with you and your management team?
So currently right now, the team that I'm working with is focusing on kind of like planting. So I have a team that's focusing on like seed collection and nursery work, and then a fellow who's going to be doing quite a bit of willow staking. But I was hoping that this group could focus on working on some planning documents. So we had talked about, you know, taking an inventory of the ash on the site. So if this group could help with finding some folks to assist with that, as well as, you know, staying on top of updates on the distribution of emerald ash borer throughout the state. And then, I like Kate and Brennan's idea about, you know, artistic solutions as well as practical solutions that we should focus on when it does come to the area.
Okay, thank you, Sierra. Robert.
So along with inventory, then that should lead to some sort of financial impact, because I it's not clear to me whether this is going to cost the fair, you know, $500 a tree, or we're going to get, you know, $50 a tree. So we need to know what the impact is, and we can't really know that until we've got the inventory, and then we can get an idea of the various ways in which we can deal with it, which has a different economic impact. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Kevin, do you have anything you'd like to have on the agenda?
Mainly, I like to try to help Sierra. She seems to be the point person on there and the focal point. So it's good to hear from her on what she needs. Mm-hmm. As an arborist and my thinking about the ash borer coming to the fair, this is my mantra, inventory and maps. That's like one of the first things. And you map all the maps, all the inventories. I've been talking with Sierra about inventories. I'm more than willing to and have a plan to start an inventory. A grand inventory might be too grand, but I think we should do every type of inventory. I've been talking with Oregon Department of Forestry about getting a really high-tech inventory program. It might not work at the fair. Had some good conversations with Sierra about it. I agree, Sierra, with everything you said about GPS and what, but I talked to the Forest Service today, and they think it still could work. So I'd like to go ahead and try at the end of February to do some inventorying. They will send out two representatives to start, and we'll have, we need a government sponsor, and it looks like Lane County was interested in helping to sponsor the Tree Plotter program, which is great to partnership with the county. Well, how about if I start over? So I've got in, I don't know if anybody read the article in the Fair Family News, but in there is a breakdown of all the different parts of an Emerald Ash Borer plan. It starts with a up-to-date tree inventory, a biodiverse tree canopy, an EAB prevention plan and accompanying efforts, education and outreach, EAB monitoring, which Paxton brought up, an EAB response plan, planting an emergency fund. And I think every one of those items should probably have a point person to it. But if we could start with you know, that kind of outline and go from there is what I'm interested in.
Thank you, Kevin. Do I see Glenn's hand up?
I was celebrating, but I do have something just to add onto this. I think this is great, and I'd love to hear what Sierra said, the support that she would really like to see from the group. It's inventory and the planning documents, which matches well with what Kevin's, you know, thinking with maps. Of course, maps are great. So I'm hearing some really solid feedback on that, that's, you know, what we should focus on. Probably some like guidance documents for Sierra's team and the Fair family generally. So I like that. And I was, the last time we met, or I think part of the group met, we talked about inventory or sampling, and I raised concerns with just doing any kind of forest inventory or needing to count every tree. And part of what I was saying was the need to mark every tree was something I didn't think we need, like that would be a distraction. But I'm all for, like just Kevin said, maybe different types of inventorying, and this sounds like a great opportunity for moving ahead with this partnership approach with using their software and their sampling. Like, let's go for that. It seems like let's do that. But like Kevin was alluding to, maybe we'll do another type of sampling that's a full, or, you know, a full inventory of every tree with a GPS point. Like we should explore that. And I think this team is really well suited to kind of break down the advantages of different types of sampling or inventory and then get gathering the resources to do it. So I'm really heart to hear that. I guess another thing to think about for the group, you know, would be guidance on native plants and our non-native plants, or ecological or climate migration approaches, when to, you know, or when not to cut other trees to make room for a tree that we might want to plant. So things like that, considerations about managing the vegetation and how we can tie that in with Fair's other policies about that, in terms of planting trees, or, you know, we don't want to encourage people to cut down any ash trees and plant a different tree that might not be what we want. So just coming up with some guidance on that would be something I would be happy for this group to tackle.
So you're advocating a planting list.
Yeah, like a planting list and planting considerations. Like, if you want to plant a tree, you know, talk to this person, and these are the reasons you might not, you know, like to plant a species from California just because you want to, you know, some considerations. Yes, like a list would be great, but a little guidance too. Yes.
Ann, you're up.
I just Well, a couple things, and Kevin, that article was really nice, and I do think we need the inventory, and I think using the tree program will be great, and I would like to volunteer to help on that. I think we need to keep up the education part, and I want to say that I looked at most of those links today, and some of them are really, I think that one of them does have a tree list on it, as I recall. And, but there's a lot of really good information there that I think we can create another Family Fair newsletter. And I was wondering if, I haven't spoken to anybody yet, but I really kind of think that we have to have a certain amount of planning organization, because I think it was Robert when he talked about the financial, because we will have financial costs, you know, if it gets there. I was looking at, I was reading about ash swales today, just in general, and I was wondering if emerald ash borers could just drown. That would be convenient, because there was a beautiful picture of the ash in the water. And but at the same time, my husband was reading in Maine, where we have some property that the ash has just moved into that. I mean, the emerald ash borer has just moved into that area, and they're busy trying to identify things. And part of it comes down to the financial cost of, in fact, it's probably only about 50 miles from the property. I don't think there's any ash on the property, but I'd like to really work on educating people so that maybe they could learn, because it's not just at fair, it's a regional wide issue, and Fair Family go to so many places that maybe they didn't realize that everything on the next block was all ash trees and stuff like that. So I'd like to kind of see some educational stuff, as you know, and I think the inventory, an inventory will also help provide some educational background so that we can educate Fair Family, and as well as provide us, it would make us that much further ahead as a private landowner compared to other private landowners should financial resources become available to address some of these problems. And that's it.
Okay, thank you, Anne. Kate and Brendan, do you have anything you'd like to add to the agenda? Or I'm sorry, Steve had his hand up first. Let me go to Steve.
All righty. Thank you, Anne. There's a whole lot more that we can do on education and outreach. And I think one of them is that when we get around to identifying, I think we ought to have a goal that by fair time, second week in July, that the significant ash trees in the eight that are, you know, noticeable or fairly accessible to the Fair Family should be marked and identified somehow, signage saying this is an ash tree, you know, check out the website, you know, that these are trees we need to cherish for their time with us from until we lose them, also you know, a strong prohibition guideline wise on moving firewood or trees from the fair site to other locations. We do not want to be the source of the infection.
Okay. And Kate and Brenda, do you have anything you'd like to add to the agenda?
I don't know that these are agenda items, but they might be sub-agenda items for future meetings. One of the things, two things that we've encountered in Chicago was that there were a lot of replanting grants which as we're talking about, you know, resources becoming available in the future, but they're focused on private landowners. So that was something that Michigan and Illinois were doing to help people take out their trees once they were infected. So some research into what sorts of financial support is available on this coast seems like it will be useful. And then another thing that's for farther in the future, but another thing that was showing up a lot in Illinois was a really concerted effort to identify trees, ash trees that were actually surviving and resistant. And it seems like we might be in a really good position with the deep inventory that is being planned to keep track of which trees survive, because then they are then contributed in the future to perhaps a much deeper in the future seed bank or something like that, where ash gets reintroduced again once the borer is gone. So those are like future agenda items. They're not agenda items for today, but.
Yeah, and I think if we want to share a little bit of just some of the like interesting, I think in a lot of ways, a lot of the art projects and things where people were just doing cool stuff with ash trees and ash wood is a sub agenda item of the education. At this stage, it's education, right? Yeah. The like projects of what to do with the ash trees is like an education item. So we can talk about that more when the education agenda item comes up. And then I think further in the future, there's the, when it's time for all the ash trees to go, if that's the strategy, all of a sudden it's like, okay, but what do you do with like thousands of ash trees?
Yeah.
Is a sort of a different question.
What do you do with them? How do you still use them? Because it's good wood and there's so much, there's an abundance of it suddenly, and treating it as a precious commodity, even though it's gone or even though it's dead, is sort of a future looking issue.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else who wants to contribute to the agenda? Well, I'm sure we're gonna flesh this out more. Paxton, go ahead.
I really agree with looking for funding. The list of agencies and people interested in this project is going to lend itself, I think, to a lot of funding. And I think if we came up with a monitoring program, we could, you know, fund it via grants, partly because the information would be useful in a far greater area than just us. We'd, you know, be kind of like an early warning site, in my opinion. The other thing I noticed in the report was how to deal with the wood, which is what Kate and we're just talking about. And that is it, and I think we've already got a head start on a processing area if we need to in Tower Lot. So I think we ought to consider what the state is looking for in a processing area. I read that section in the report. So we've got a perfect spot there to actually deal with emerald ash borer wood. So I think that ought to go in the future planning too. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Is there anybody I've missed? Anybody want to contribute more to the agenda items for the future? Steve, go ahead.
Just in addition to what Paxton was talking about, the Tower Lot has been site staff, site crews, sort of repository for wood for a long time, since my days. Just a reminder that Shane has added to the site inventory a chipper, which might come in handy.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay.
Oh, so, I don't think we own the chipper, actually.
Hmm. Well, you would know.
we may very well end up with enough use for it to own one, but yeah. That's in the future.
I think it'd be a good acquisition.
I thought he had bought one.
All right.
My bad.
That's okay. We will have one, no doubt.
I encouraged him to buy one, and he said, no, they're a worker's hazard. Just as soon rent one, because those that you rent come well-maintained. And, you know, and then they're out of our hands, you know, it literally, when we're not using it. I thought that we could actually really use one myself, because there's a lot of ways that we could use chipped wood. So It's kind of an ambivalent thing, but I understand his concerns about workers, volunteer workers around chippers. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else who, I'm sure this list of things that we want to add to our agenda will increase as we go on, but let's go ahead and usually in the agenda review, we talk about how long we're going to meet today. Typically, a two-hour meeting is about as much as anybody can stand. What do you think about calling it quits at 8 o'clock and picking it up again at a later date? That sound good to everybody? Okay, we'll go ahead and do that.
Should we establish a regular meeting or check-in time?
You know, I think that sounds like a good idea. We are now at the first Tuesday of the month. Do you want to stick with the first Tuesday of the month? Or do you want to go to a two-week schedule?
Boy, I think right now, once a month, first Tuesday would work for me.
Okay. So we'll put that down as a tentative.
A lot of us will be attending the lump meeting after this.
Yeah, the lump meeting is usually 8 days after the board meeting or something like that. I've forgotten what you'd think. I'd remember that awful lot after all these years, but
we could just say, Dennis, we could just say that the Tuesday before the lump meeting too, because sometimes would it maybe be the case that the first Tuesday is the meeting? Never mind. I don't know. I think sometimes our lump meeting is actually the third Tuesday. Is that right? So on that month, maybe we would meet on the second Tuesday.
Yeah, it depends on the board meeting. So the timing of the board meeting is usually, the lump committee is usually a week and some days after the board meeting. And so, anyway, we will work that out. So on the agenda, usually we have old business, which we're looking at now, as the list includes, then new business, then assigning homework, and then evaluating the meeting, and then setting the next meeting date, time, and location. And then saying cheers and adios. Let's start with staff report. Sierra, what can you give us for a staff report on this issue?
Mostly just that I picked up some native tree species recently from a CapEx fund. So I added those to our nursery. It's about 65 new trees. The starts we started have yet to sprout. They're still in the cold shock phase in the fridge. And the ash seems to be doing okay with the storms this year. We had some maples and pines fall. But I think just a few ash branches. Otherwise, the ash is looking like it's doing good on the site at this time.
Okay, thank you, Sierra. And next is old business. So let's just kind of launch into this. I'll just take this sort of list down from the top where we talked about this. Trapping needed. Paxson brought that up. Early detection. And I think I pointed out that Shane had been monitoring and he had not found any signs of EAB during his tenure. I did find one source of EAB traps, and I posted that link on the EAB website. What else can we do for early detection? According to what I hear from where I see from other sources, by the time you see the tree die back at the top, the infestation is well established and might have been established for 2 or 3 years. Paxson.
Oh, One of the things I noticed in the reports, and I read about the what a good EAB trap is. Then there seemed to be two kinds. There was a purple triangular one that you baited, and it didn't last very long. They seemed to be checked quarterly or every 6 months. And then there was another one that was a kind of an inverted cone that was hung high in the trees. And they had those seemed to last up to 2 years, what the was looking at. So I was thinking of trying to figure out, you know, a program that where we could hang some early ones and just monitor them, you know. I'm not sure on what kind of schedule. They're usually fairly high up in the trees from reading it. So, you know, again, that's something we can figure out. But I think early monitoring is probably a good idea. I was thinking of South Woods just because it's a long, nice swash that might be a good place to do that. I agree with identifying the places with, you know, doing an inventory. I think that's one of our primary things also at the beginning here is trying to figure out where our ash trees are. Thanks.
Glenn, your hand's up.
Just a note on the traps. From what I did for I did an Emerald Ash Borer training with a fellow who was doing his PhD at WSU, and he had spent a lot of time in Michigan. And one of the takeaways from his experience was that the traps are they're okay at detecting kind of after the already showed up. The trap is not the first place that the emerald ash borers go. It's more incidental after they're getting established. So his strong recommendation was don't put up traps and then wait for them to show up in the traps to think that's going to tell you when they've arrived. By the time they're in the traps, they're already establishing. So just something to keep in mind. That was his kind of advice, and to the point where he was like, if you're not monitoring otherwise, the traps are essential, but if you're also monitoring for other signs that's going to tell you before the trap. So could be part of an important piece, but I think awareness of the other signs and whatever that monitoring might, whatever that might look like, there'd be multi-parts rather than just the traps. So like binoculars, looking up at the tops of certain trees regularly, something like that, or drone approaches, different monitoring.
Thank you, Glenn.
Yep.
And Robert, did I see your hand up?
So if we're doing the monitoring by some variety of methods, and we get the information, is that public? Is that posted immediately to some website, or how does that work?
Yeah, there's a reporting system for the state. And Kevin, you've got your hand up. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, if we do use the Tree Plotter program, it's a nationwide program, but the state uses it. It's actually quite interesting if you can look at Forest Grove, where the Emerald Ash Borer is. They are using this Tree Plotter program there, and you can click on trees and see all sorts of information about whether it's a suspect tree, whether it's infected or not. So I go to the site almost too much to see if it's spreading anymore, if they've found any more trees that have the beetles in it. So I do like the categories. One, it will show beetles found or suspect trees. This Tree Plotter program is actually statewide too, so you can zoom in around. They actually did it at Hendricks Park. I'm trying to get a copy or get access to that, because I think that would be somewhat similar to the fair because it's really forested. But yeah, that would be a good way to report it if we had the Tree Plotter program.
Anne, go ahead.
And regularly checking our inventory data would really help too. And I was looking in Franklin and Gynest, and their photo is of Finley Wildlife Refuge. And so I was wondering what, along the lines of what Kevin was saying, what my neighbor here, Finley Wildlife, is looking at.
Thank you, Anne.
And I can try and contact them. I know some people out there.
Okay.
That's okay.
Rick, you go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everybody realizes for every big ash tree there, there's anywhere from a half dozen to a dozen small trees and seedlings. They're everywhere. And we might want to flag them too. Because, some of the trees may end up showing some resistance. Who knows? And something I've done with ash is make tool handles. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best woods for tool handles. And the cool thing is you can do it without any power tools at all.
And baseball bats, from what I understand, the ash borer has really cut into the production of ash baseball bats and being largely replaced by aluminum. But that's not our concern, probably. So, Kevin, do you have your hand up again?
Yeah, so monitoring, just imagine we're going to have 10,000 eyeballs on these trees. I like what Glenn said. We're going to see it before it gets caught in traps. So we should probably think about how do you report if you think you've seen evidence of it, which will be somewhat crazy. But there's probably like with tree hazards, at main camp, there's a notebook. So I wonder if, maybe start this year by putting a EAB notebook at main camp and for people who think they've spotted it, nice old school method for people to report it.
Yeah, at the quartermaster, they have a reporting notebook. Brendan, go ahead.
It seems like that, harnessing the fact that there's a zillion people on the site once a year makes a lot of sense. And it seems like then, one of the big jobs of the educational component of this project is to educate people onto what they're looking for. Because otherwise no one's gonna know what's right in the book. So that seems like a big and valuable early education project.
I'd like to suggest laminates of the emerald ash borer and for the ash trees and, collect both of them. And so we can put a scale on the emerald ash borer thing. So if they see a bug like that, they can know how big it is because size makes a difference. They can learn to recognize the tree and they can take it with them to wherever else they go. And it might be something worthwhile. It wouldn't take that much to put it together.
Okay. Now, although I've heard when I proposed laminates in the past, the aesthetics committee said no. But there's some way we can do that.
I never heard of an aesthetics committee, so.
Oh yeah, well, that's not what it's called, but it's a
secret.
Yeah, there's a committee that, members of the fair, who say, no plastics, no laminates, no this, no that. It's got to be hand painted signs, but you know, there's probably some way we can do some sort of printing that will be informative and eco-conscious. Did I see Steve hand up?
No.
About Robert?
We could have a really interesting wristband with the emerald ash borer on it and in its different life cycles and whatever, or the life cycle at that point in the summertime of what it would boast, what it would look like, then everyone would have it and be wondering about it. And, you know, then there'd be, you know, they could somehow find out about, they could see pictures then of the emerald ash borer on like, you know, a display at an educational station and ask questions about it. But if, you know, if your wrist is crawling with them, you know, then that might be good. The other thing, of course, that gets into the laminate thing is, you know, if you had, if you label the trees with a QR code somehow so that then people can say, what's that? You know, like a sticker, say, right? And then you could, you know, then you could see, you get linked immediately to a website about the emerald ash borer. And after the fair, you could take those stickers and you, whenever you found an ash tree walking around wherever, you could just stick it on it. And, you know, you could start some sort of, what do they call that, viral thing, you know. I'm done.
All right, thank you, Robert. Glenn.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Just a couple points. I think the laminate idea sounds really cool. I think that, you know, obviously Fair Family pump those out and some people still, I think, you know, I use them like little badges and they'd like to collect the lammies. So I think with Fair Family, we would just, you can do that without going through whatever that committee is. I know that for doing educational displays at the fair or really anywhere, Ambiance has committee-like control over that kind of decision. And depending on where it's at, that people like the bums will assert privilege to determine what is within the guidelines or make exceptions. So I've been on both ends of that. And so it's having done education at the fair and having to start a whole crew to do education because there's no real support for education. Like it's great to have ideas, but if you're not on a crew, it doesn't really, you're kind of, it's hard to get it to go. So, but there is educational crews. Several of us are on them. So we could kind of run it through there or, but it does take a lot of work to do that. But just to acknowledge Anne's idea, I think that's something that people could carry with them, even if it's just Fair Family to start, could be good. And then we can work on the aesthetic gatekeepers as far as getting it out to the rest of the Fair Family. I just throwing this idea out there, you know, we talked about the inventories before, and then Kevin provided that great research and partnership that he's been involved with the state. I think doing education for the Fair Family or the public are totally different things. And then there's education for people that we want to help us detect the borer when it arrives. Those are three populations in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like educate the Fair Family, yes, but we're not going to depend on them or the public to really, you know, be our eyes and ears necessarily. I think we're going to need a special group of people that are dedicated. And that to me is, you know, we do some trainings, we have some on-site fun, we like encourage people to be part of this thing and train them up and get people really looking at the trees very carefully. And people are gonna need binoculars if they really wanna get into this. Cool, because they need to have binoculars, but, or at least one person with binoculars on a team to check them out is very helpful. Anyway, that's my thought is I think the inventorying and collection of data could be kind of separate from the education. But I think that there's education involved with all of it. But if you're having kind of a training up a core group of fair enthusiasts, whether they're, you know, members or family or not, just people that want to learn about ash borer and help the fair out, come out and help with that and contribute to the data set. Sounds like a powerful way to kind of harness the people's energy for the fair. Getting a more granular look at the trees we have on site.
a good approach for that.
Thank you, Glenn. Kevin.
Yeah, hey, Glenn, I love that. Maybe have Emerald Ash Borer ambassadors training a group of people, and we can give them metallic green capes or wings or hats to walk around awesome. In. So this labeling ash trees keeps coming up, and putting things on trees, just I almost have a body reaction to that. I'm sure Sierra and Steve will too, because they spend so much of their times pulling things off the trees all year round. So I don't know how to deal with this. You know, what I want to do when I mark trees, I want to put a nail in a round metal silver dollar, you know, size piece, and then it's there, and then it's not going to float away. That's a little harsh, but you know, laminate sounds great at first, but then we're introducing plastic into the environment. That, you know, will all those stickers and laminates get picked up? You're creating a job. Is it, how do we address this problem? Would it be good to go to it was at the aesthetics committee and just say, hey, we want to mark trees. How do we do it? Thanks.
Or
thank you.
Kevin, I just want to throw in, as this other subcommittee chair, I also have a visceral reaction when people talk about marking up all the ash trees. It does not make sense to me. I would almost rather see non-ash trees marked, because then it's like, oh, it's only, you know, so many trees, right? But anyway, I agree too. I think marking up all the ash trees, or putting a thing on them or a flag, or as a way to impress upon people how many ash trees there are, that's so much work that goes into doing that and putting the things on the trees and or cleaning it up or whatever, that you kind of lost the forest for the trees. What we want to do is make people aware of how many ash trees are around. And I think that's more about it. We do that within community, and we have events, and we have trainings, and we have Fair Family News, and we have ambassadors on site going around to the neighborhoods, like going around to the different crews, all of that stuff. That's going to impress upon people. Once they learn what ashes look like, then we're there. But marking them all up, maybe that's good in small areas as a part of a display, but I don't think could be a lot of effort there put into that. But also, just Kevin, on the laminates, I think what Ann and I were talking about was for people to carry on them and say, oh, it's their own little personal reference that they put on the back of their photo ID or whatever, those kind of laminates. So that's what I was thinking of. That's it.
Thanks. Go ahead.
I really like the idea of running programs, you know, to educate the Fair family. I don't know if it could part of be integrated into the passport program that's done during the fair. There might be a section on Emerald Ash Borer there. I think doing something at the picnic where we have kind of a captive audience for the family would also be a good time to do a little program. And encourage them to go to evaluation one day or four after. As to the laminates, they get saved. They don't end up in the garbage, or sometimes they get turned into lost and found. But it's the family does an amazing job with laminate. It's something that's done within the family for internal Fair family entertainment. Tom Gannon, when he got hired as general manager, was really surprised and at the diversity of the laminates and the collections. They become collectibles. When we did the goals summits, we made 3,500 laminates of the goals and passed them out, and people carried them around for a long time. I really needed to do, I need to do more of those in reality, or at least the Vision Action Committee needs to do more of those. One of the things I found in doing that many is that you can work with the Fair copier and print on cards or print on cardstock two-sided, and then cut it out, and it becomes, actually you don't have to even run cardstock. You can print it out on paper. And then as you cut them out, once they go in the laminate jacket, they become quite rigid. I did photo ID for 15 years, so and developed that process. I've loaned my laminator out to various crews and things like that for fair projects. So I've got the gear to, if we want to do that project. I like that idea of laminates. Anyway, thank you.
Glenn, I see your hand up, and then Rick. Excuse me. Glenn, do you have something to say?
I'm sorry, that was an old hand.
Okay.
Consider it Rick, go ahead.
Go ahead. Rick.
Readily available in the right places. If you want to put a nail in a tree, you can get an aluminum alloy nail and aluminum numbered tags if you want to do that. So that's nice because a steel tool, saw or whatever, will not be destroyed by hitting an aluminum nail. And I've also used just cut up aluminum cans. So they've got sharp edges, and it's a pain in the butt to fold those sharp edges over so they're not a hazard. But those are various ways to do labels that I've messed with.
Okay, thank you. Anne, go ahead.
One issue that I've noticed, and this came out of the December path planning meeting, is, and this goes back to what Glenn said about marking the, identifying the trees that aren't ash. It doesn't, which I think is easier than identify, you know, beyond a inventory or the ash, which are two different things, is because in discussions with path planning, they don't realize how much ash there is. And so they're making longer term plans sometimes. And it really blew me away that they somehow think that those trees might still be there, and probably Xavantadu is one of the easiest places to describe that at, because it's surrounded by ash, and on the east and the south and the west. And so I think this education is really important to somehow make these people understand that things could be changing. And I'm, you know, I think maybe more Family Fair news articles might help too, but that as we're planning, people need to understand that what they see may not be there. I mean, what happens when the ash, what would happen if all of a sudden most of the ash was gone? By Sesame Gate, you know, so there's all this stuff, and I'm having a really hard time. I think this group understands, but it's really hard to make these other people understand that that tree that they're going to anchor to by not touching it is potentially going to be gone. So I don't know. That's something we have to address. Thank you.
I'll just add to that real quick. And I think, you know, basically we did like an education subcommittee and thinking about fair family versus the public and, you know, and for the other committees and things like that. And I, this is where I think have like training up people from across the fair sectors, really
having some trainings and something like an inventorying activity to really bring together the community of people that then become our ambassadors, right? Then they become the local people within their communities at the fair to really bring everybody else up to speed so that we're not relying on, you know, three fair family news articles, and we're not relying on a sign, and we're not relying on this one event we had. We're really pumping up our community ambassadors that are then going to help everybody understand this. You know, it's a long game, but I think that's a sustained effort, basically, rather than one-off events or articles. It's important. But an education could help with that.
We have some of the best interpreters I've seen, and they are part of, they got master's degrees in forest education. And I would really like, I think they're wasted on the fire crew myself, but it would be great if we could bring some of them in, and I could reach out to some of them. I don't know if they'd want to commit to something that, you know, the commitment of now until whenever kind of thing, but I can try and reach out to them.
Thanks, Ann. Sierra, you made your hand up.
Yeah, I was just thinking of running the idea by everyone in this meeting about the potential of using the sign crew. If somebody in the meeting came up with some verbiage or graphics they'd like painted on a sign, we could always send that over to sign crew, and then they have an element of their crew that picks up signage after fair. So that is a possibility for any significant ash trees that we'd like special signage, you know, around.
Great idea, Sierra. Robert.
We could essentially take, you know, sort of panoramic photographs, let's say in Xvanadu, and then mark on the photographs, you know, have a, you know, what are ash trees and what are other trees. And that could be a sign. So you're not actually putting stuff on the trees, but it's sort of a record, you know, locally. So when you're walking by, you see a sign, you know, that will be taken down later, that of this view that you're seeing from here, these are the ash trees, and these are going to go away.
Thank you, Robert. And I'm not bragging, but giving you a bit of my history. I've got a PhD in forest ecology. And one of the things that we learn in ecology is field sampling. So I think we need a hybrid program where we identify the significant ash trees in the figure eights and the loops. And we flag them so that our fair family and the public know these are the trees at risk. But in places like the South Woods and the unorganized territory, it would be impractical to try to identify each individual tree by itself and map it. And there we need a more systematic sampling program to sort of randomize our selection grid, and then use that selection grid to count the number of ash trees and other trees in those grids and enter that into our database. So although each individual ash tree might not be located as an individual, they are so closely crowded against one another that if we just knew, for example, what the density of ash trees in the South Woods was, that would be a good planning item for the future. And do I have more comments on early detection and mapping? All right, let's go on then.
Could we would we, as part of our inventory plots, establish maybe photo points?
Yeah, we could.
Is that something we should include in our quest for the future or our planning?
That would be a good thing to do. So let's look at Glenn. Go ahead.
Oh, I think Kevin's this protocol that he's talking about using that the state and the county are collaborating on. I'm imagining that's a sampling approach, but I think it sounds like they kind of lay out the sampling design for you as part of that using that protocol. And I would imagine too, there's a place to upload photos with that program. I'm guessing.
Okay, thanks, Glenn. Next thing we've got is goals and collaboration. What do we want this subcommittee to do? And how should we collaborate with other organizations and individuals at the fair? All right, don't speak up all at once. Rick, go ahead. You got something to say?
Well, I'm a veg manic. I'm going to be identifying trees like mad. I'm particularly interested in marking young seedlings. That bit I heard about people coppicing the ash and keeping the sprouts small, and apparently the tree will survive that way. I guess it's just that the borer doesn't want to go into anything that's too small. And like I said, there's many more little tiny seedlings coming up than there are mature trees.
True enough. What are the goals of this subcommittee? What do we want to do? Glenn, do you have your hand up again?
I suppose I do. But I didn't raise it for that particular question. I think, you know, I guess when I wrote that too, I was thinking about to me, what is sometimes a vague line between, like, if we're a board committee, you know, a subcommittee of the board, a board appointed committee, then are we supposed to just be like informing policy, quote unquote policy? But it seems like with this issue, it's so like operations can use support, you know, right? So it's not all just up to Sierra to figure out what to do, right? So she's got a lot of resources in terms of people and planning documents and things like that. So I think, I guess that was why I kind of wanted to make sure we defined that so that we're not, that we're not trying to do too much on the operational, like we're giving our team the right leeway to do what they need to do, but providing the right support for them at the same time and the right support for the rest of the fair family. So it's not up to Sierra to implement an educational thing, because maybe that's something we could do, or we, you know, work on it with her together, or vice versa. So we're not trying to implement policy decisions or make those decisions, when really a lot of times we need to leave that leeway with the operations team. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring up, that line between policy and operations and how we skirt the middle there.
Yeah, I should point out that the LUMP committee has always been straddling that line between policy and operations. And we have always said that our primary role is supporting the site manager and helping the site manager do whatever he or she needs to do. I can think we can continue with that. Kevin, do you have another comment?
Yeah. So goals for this committee, it would be great to, for maybe that's the next item, is to assign homework. It'd be great for a lot of these things we're touching on is to give, so people could be point persons on it. If people would step up and, you know, I think we, then to go back a subject, outreach. If we could have a point person for outreach, and I think outreach could have two different categories. One, outreach within the fair, but outreach within the greater community, from Elmira to Lane County to the Forest. There's just so, the Long Tom Council, this thing's going to balloon so big. I think this committee is going to get big as it goes on. Like, I think every group in the fair should have an EAB member in their committee, because it's going to affect every aspect of the fair, or I would like to know what aspect of the fair it's not going to affect, because it's going to be so big.
That's true. Thanks, Kevin. Anybody else want to talk about the goals of this subcommittee and what we wanted to accomplish? Well, this will be a work in progress. Paxson, go ahead.
Be preparing for the inevitable is really, you know, kind of the goals. And I think we have to kind of assume that is going to be an inevitable, you know, so it's just a function of time. So there's several steps to deal with it, and we need to start on that journey, is kind of, that's the goal. I really appreciate Glenn bringing up the difference between policy and operations, because LUMP does cross over both ways. We really support operations a lot, and look at the, you know, how, what they need, and make recommendations, and how, you know, if we need to recommend to the board, how we, the board can further help operations in this. It's, most of these work groups are, it, this is such a big project in reality that it really takes a starter small work group like this to do it. I suspect if it, you know, becomes a real big localized problem for Bonita, yes, our work will become very important in how other people will learn, teaching other people how to deal with it. So I think our goal is to learn how to deal with this emergency in reality.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Paxson. Anybody else want to speak on the topic of goals and collaboration? Glenn, go ahead.
And anybody else is free, but I would just be willing to volunteer to take what we've written up thus far and what we came up and try to come up with a goal statement that we can then chew on and decide yes or no, or let's change it. So I'd be willing to try to capture that from the notes and from our discussions.
All right.
And I like what you said, Dennis, about explicitly, the LUMP committee explicitly, you know, traditionally supports the site manager. I think that, like, putting that in our goals, it would be a great, you know, incorporation for us to focus on that. So as one example.
Okay. This is all part.
Go ahead, Ann.
Sorry, Glenn. This is all part of our land stewardship, really, in many ways, you know, and so we're under that umbrella of our land stewardship, and I think that that's an important thing to understand when you have, I don't quite know what to call this, the approaching issues or disasters.
Thanks, Ann. Okay, anybody else want to speak on goals of this subcommittee? Okay, next step is, Sierra's report, she has a team focusing on seed collection, nursery, Willis taking, leading to planting docks, inventory, use of ash woods. Those are all items that we might be able to address in collaboration with Sierra. Robert brought up financial impact. And what do we need to talk about there?
If I can go, we need somebody to be a point person for that. It'd be great to, you guys know more people at the fair, but in just talking to the Forest Service this week, one of the guys said there is current funding for this, which surprised me quite a bit. I think we need to be aggressive about getting money. This will cost so much money and there's no existing fund for it. So it should be one of the top priorities. And if we could find a person to be who's the grant writer, who knows how to do this thing, it's so important.
Thanks, Kevin.
And I would just add to what Kevin was saying, the same person or team that's involved with the outreach to our local partners should also be the same person or team dealing with the grants, because that's where we're going to get leverage, I think, is partnering with other local entities.
Thank you.
And that Excellent. Should probably be Kirsten. So we need to involve her as part of this process.
Yeah. She seems to be really good at getting grants. Okay. Anybody else want to speak to?
And is our primary outreach person at this point for Beyond the Fair.
Okay. Sierra. Would it be Sierra, go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of, I guess, wrap up kind of what I'm hearing. So it sounds like I'll meet with Kevin and ODA in February, and we'll maybe test out the tree inventory thing. The last I heard, ODA had not yet released any grants, and I reached out to Long Tom Watershed Council, and they also were not pursuing any grants or active projects with EAB, but they would be interested in hearing about, you know, our efforts and what we pursue and assisting if they're available. But I think, you know, this committee keeping an eye out for any grants that they see and passing them along to Kirsten and myself would be an excellent resource for the fair.
Thank you, Sierra. Okay, anybody else want to speak on the financial impact?
And I just want to add, I think I mentioned it earlier, Sierra and I had talked, she'd been approached by someone about, you know, apply for this program. And, you know, one of the things was having a plan in place and knowing exactly or approximately, I don't mean exactly because it would never be exact, but, you know, a rough idea of the acreage that we're talking about and a plan, you know, of what we want for the future, because many of these, especially the federal ones, they will have a planning process that this money will have to fit into, and they will want what we're doing to fit into it, which I think when we talk about the inventory and everything, we're headed the right direction on it, but it's really important that when we talk about grants, we realize it requires some background information, and we're headed the right direction, but we need to realize that you can't just write these grants off the top of your head. And thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Anybody else on the financial impact?
It's going to be a lot.
Yeah, Kevin, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I've been hesitating to go there, but I've really been thinking about the worst case scenario of what's going to happen, which if I can just get it off my chest, it'd be kind of a therapy for me, But when the ash borer finally gets here, and it is inevitable, it's not, it's going to happen. And it's gonna start on the edges of the groves. It's gonna hit the edge trees and the weak trees first. Again, I don't think it's gonna have quickest 3 years. Once it starts attacking trees, we'll still have a couple years before it starts killing trees. But once it starts killing trees, it's gonna spread like wildfire. And it is so much like a wildfire. I was the arborist up at Brighton Bush before the fire up there, and just going up there now and seeing the mosaic of trees that are left is shocking, because I knew those trees so well. We have advanced notice that there's going to be a wildfire spreading across the fairgrounds, and it's going to take out so many trees. And I don't know, I'm going to try to pick my words carefully. I don't know how the fair is actually going to operate when the ash borer hits. Because we're going to have hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands and thousands of trees within the eight that are going to need to be taken down, and they're going to be dead. At some point, someone's going to come to me and ask me, what's the risk factor of thousands of people camping underneath dead trees? And can we do that? And what's going to happen is, in the eight, it's going to be a logging operation. I'm going to need, so you're going to have to take trees down, and you're going to have to get log trucks to go into the eight to pull those logs out of there, because it's a flood zone. We got to get it out. They're just going to take so much space. And I don't know. I'm going to pick on Steve. Steve, when, how, what months out of the year can you get heavy equipment into the eight?
Oh boy.
How many months out of the year?
There are times when we're tiptoeing in at the beginning of main camp. and that happens when we get soaking rains in the fall. So
October. So yeah. That's a scenario I'm looking that the logging operation can't happen in July.
No.
It's got to wait till after the fair. So that's August, September, maybe October. There's 3 months that you could actually, that's not a big window to take down hundreds and hundreds and thousands of trees. And then after October, you got to go through the whole winter and spring. And then there's going to be so many more trees that are dying, and we can't take them down until August. Well, I don't see how we're going to be able to, you know, we could take them down. We could just drop them. So then we're talking about closing areas of the fair off limits. Like, Steve, think about traffic camp. We can't get to you this year. We're going to close traffic camp and move you to the parking lot, which you're going to be really happy because you guys are in the sun all the time.
Don't expect me to carry that message to traffic crew.
How do you close traffic camp, like especially with ramblers, you know, during the fair? How do you close areas? It's just going to be a nightmare. And then there's going to be partial trees. How do you take, should we take trees down beforehand? It's, do not underestimate how big a problem this is. In my vision, I see the eight's going to look a lot more like Xanadu in the future. It's going to be wide open. Thank you Kevin, for letting me get that off my chest.
Kate, you're not, Kate or Brendan, whoever's up next.
Yeah, Kevin, I really appreciate you saying that. And I mean, we're obviously a newcomer peripheral, just dropping in for a minute here, so I don't have all the background. But I mean, what Kevin's saying, it seems like a really urgent discussion that needs to be happening. And again, you know, I don't want to, you all know what's going on better than I do. Like, does the logging need to start this August? Right? Like, if you—
Absolutely not.
I think it's a serious question though, but I think it's something that needs to sort of get it makes sense to me, like, if, or I guess the first question is, can the logging keep up with the speed of die-off that Kevin is describing? Right? Like, can every dead tree get logged before the next fair? And if not, do you have to do preemptive logging? Is that a it seems like, and if the answer is no, that's great. That's the answer that I think everyone wants, but it seems like that needs to be made definitive sooner rather than later, because otherwise you're losing phase that you could have been preemptively logging. So just to throw on the doomsday talk, I think it's important because it's kind of a doomsday scenario we're all talking about.
If I can add, I'm sorry, I said absolutely not. I think we've got to take all options and seriously look at them. I think more, we can't do it, you know, this year, next year.
Yeah, right. So
that's more what I meant, absolutely not. I think we might want to look at taking down live trees to create open spaces so you can plant, because not only do these trees have to come down, but there's things in the way. All the booths are in the way. The trees, the logs have to come out to the road. All the booths have to come down, are going to be hit by trees and come down. The booth owners, well, one, I assume who owns the booths? Does the fair have the decision-making power that, you know, I can drop a tree on a booth